Blog Talk Radio.
For radio as secular as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
We'll talk with Amit Pal about a chilling development in Hindu nationalism.
Then we'll chat with Mark Dan, FFRF's Director of Governmental Affairs in Washington, D.C.,
about combating Christian nationalism in American government.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. The World Health Organization, WHO, has flown in 20 tons of emergency medical supplies to Beirut City to help treat people injured in Tuesday's massive blast, the latest support to arrive from the United Nations. The supplies include 1,000 trauma kits and the same number of surgical interventions to treat burns and other trauma. The shipment was airlifted on Wednesday from a logistics hub in Dubai on a plane donated by the United Arab Emirates. As a result of the blast, three hospitals in Beirut are out of action. Two more are partially damaged, leaving a critical shortage of beds. In a statement, WHO said that patients have been transferred to hospitals across the country, but many facilities remain overwhelmed. The development comes amid concerns about insufficient cereal stocks in Lebanon after grain silos were destroyed in the blast. The country imports around 85% of its needs, the World Food Programme said, warning that severe damage to the port of Beirut would likely push food prices beyond the reach of many. It's been 75 years since an atomic bomb dropped on the Japanese city of Hiroshima caused massive death and destruction, whose effects linger to this day, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said on Thursday. In a tribute to the victims of the 1945 bombing, who are known as the Hibakusha, Mr. Guterres renewed his appeal for the need to eliminate nuclear weapons. States that possessed them needed to get rid of them, he said, as the risk of weapons of mass destruction being used was too high. In a call for states to invest in peaceful, sustainable development rather than destruction, the UN chief also appealed for an end to nuclear testing. Its legacy has been horrific, both for people and the environment, he explained.
Today, a world without nuclear weapons seems to be slipping further from our grasp. The web of arms control, transparency and confidence-building instruments established during the Cold War and its aftermath is fraying. Division, distrust and the lack of dialogue threaten to return the world to unrestrained strategic nuclear competition. States possessing nuclear weapons are modernizing their arsenals and developing new and dangerous weapons and delivery systems. The risk of nuclear weapons being used intentionally, by accident or through miscalculation is too high for such trends to continue.
3 days after the U.S. bombing of Hiroshima, a second nuclear device was dropped on the Japanese city of Nagasaki. Most of the roughly 13,000 nuclear weapons now in global arsenals are vastly more destructive than the bombs dropped on Japan, Mr. Guterres said, adding that detonating just one of them would cause a humanitarian disaster of unimaginable proportions. Indigenous people have shown extraordinary resilience during the COVID-19 pandemic, but they are at particular risk as the crisis goes on, the UN Secretary General said on Thursday. In an appeal to governments to protect them and consult them to boost their resilience, Antonio Guterres said that 476 million indigenous peoples around the world have had their lives devastated by the health threat. Most recently, lapsed enforcement of environmental protections has encouraged illegal mining and logging to encroach on indigenous people's land, he said. This has led to many indigenous people being killed and others facing threats and violence. In a message marking the International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples on the 9th of August, the UN Secretary General explained that before the new coronavirus hit, minorities already faced entrenched inequalities, stigmatization, and discrimination. Concretely, poor access to healthcare, clean water, and sanitation increased the dangers they faced, the UN chief said. Mr. Guterres noted that indigenous women, who are often the main providers for their families, have also been hard hit by market closures as they've been unable to sell their goods and often lack welfare protection. Children from indigenous families are also more vulnerable than ever, the UN Secretary General continued, as many do not have access to virtual learning opportunities while schools remain closed. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Stan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Welcome to Prethought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this is radio for the rest of us, those of us who are not believers, who are doubters, the unorthodox, the heretics, the iconoclasts. Whether you call yourself an atheist or agnostic or rationalist, this radio show is for you.
Well, I call myself an atheist, a happy atheist. I'm Dan Barker, co-president of FFRF and co-host of his show. This is the August 6th, 2020 edition of Freethought Radio. As usual, Buzz Kemper is engineering from his recording studio, Audio for the Arts, while Annie Laurie and I are in our Safer at Home Audio for the Aparts studio in Madison, Wisconsin.
Freethought Radio is the weekly production of the National Freedom From Religion Foundation, which is a 501c3 educational charity working to keep religion out of government, as our secular and godless constitution dictates, and working to educate the public about the views of non-believers and non-theists, those of us who are personally free from religion. In addition to our radio show, we have other media. We have a Freethought a newspaper, Freethought Today. We'd be glad to send you a sample copy if you go to our website at fffrf.org. The main page has a link. We have a digital version or a hard copy version. We also have a TV show that's on hiatus right now, Freethought Matters. You can watch on YouTube. And we have the nearly weekly Ask an Atheist show, which is on Wednesdays, noon central, on Facebook Live, and then it goes into our YouTube archives. And we had an interesting show yesterday about a very fundamentalist Mormon artist and his theocratic vision of the White House that you might want to look into, with the main guest being Andrew Seidel.
Well, it's a hilarious show. I mean, his artwork is just so...
So FFRF Ask an Atheist.
Today, we're going to talk about what the FFRF is doing in Washington, D.C. We'll be joined by FFRF's Director of Governmental Affairs, Mark Dan, who will tell us what it's like lobbying Congress during the pandemic and what FFRF is doing to keep our government secular.
And before that, we're going to be talking with FFRF's Director of Communications, Amitabh Pal. We call him Amit, who will tell us how India is changing from a secular state into a Hindu nationalist theocracy. There was a radical development yesterday, and Amit knows a lot about it, so stay tuned for that.
This week is the anniversary of the birthday of the great 19th century agnostic orator Robert Ingersoll. He was born August 11th, 1833.
So on FFRF's debaptismal certificate, we include a quote from Ingersoll. It's a famous quote: "With soap, baptism is a good thing."
With you, soap.
You can download a free copy of this debaptismal certificate from FFRF's website, from our shop, fffrf.org/shop. Or if you want it officially signed by Dan Barker, as a former minister, now turned atheist, on parchment paper, we send you two copies, one for you to send to your church and one for you to frame, and you can get that on our website for $4.
Ingersoll's creed was, "The time to be happy is now, the place to be happy is here, the way to be happy is to make others so." And we'll hear those words of Ingersoll in the song, "The Time to Be Happy," during the break.
Ingersoll's birthday is also shared by Steve Wozniak, born August 11th, 1950. Wozniak and Steve Jobs founded Apple Computer in 1976. I am also Atheist or agnostic, I don't know the difference, Wozniak has said. I've never been to church and prefer to think for myself.
And since FFRF has been using Mac computers since 1986, we have more than 30 of them now, we might consider Steve Wozniak a kind of early co-founder of FFRF.
Well, I don't think he would think he was, but you can learn more about Steve Wozniak or Robert Ingersoll and hundreds of other historic and current freethinkers at our Free Thought of the Day website at fffrf.org/day. Now, in news, we have a very interesting victory. This last week, we have persuaded a Massachusetts town into removing a religious display at a library playground, and I like to say that that library was all wet when it comes to the Constitution. And I don't know if we were flooded with complaints, but it had to do with Noah's Ark.
And I get it, flooded.
The Ashburnham Library Playground featuring a turning picture game that was all about the biblical tale. And paraphrasing it so little kids could hopefully understand this. And so our intake attorney, Maddie Ziegler, did write the town, and they have removed it. And we've run into this other places, so if you run into this on public playgrounds anywhere, do let us know, because it's a very troubling display aimed squarely at the most impressionable of children. And it's such a grotesque story.
It's a story of genocide, of killing millions of people.
Yes, and enlightened parents everywhere today regard this tale as a barbarous tale, that where this deity mercilessly drowns nearly all human beings and every other living thing. Totally inappropriate to teach little children about. So, and Dan,
it's interesting how they kind of cutesify this horrible story for children. And, you know, I used to hear it in Sunday school when I was a kid about Noah's Ark and the cute little animals, and you've seen all the pictures. I think the most popular children's song about Noah's Ark, it's a song called Arky, Arky. I mean, how cute is that? It ignores the genocide and turns the story into a sweet little tale of cuddly animals. Some of the words in that song are, the Lord told Noah there's going to be a floody, floody. Get those children out of the muddy, muddy. So there you go.
They were all drowned. So, and on a more serious side, let's talk about the Trump travel ban.
The Freedom From Religion Foundation has signed on to an amicus brief challenging President Trump's discriminatory travel ban. The case is Arab American Civil Rights League versus Donald J. Trump et al. It's before the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. We had in December lent our signature to another friend of the court brief in a similar lawsuit, the International Refugee Assistance Project versus Trump, before the Fourth Circuit. Both cases are a result of the Supreme Court's decision in 2018 that the Trump administration's prohibition on immigrants from several Muslim-majority countries could proceed. The Sixth Circuit plaintiffs include individuals whose families are separated because of the ban, and organizations whose advocacy is chilled or interfered with as a result of the travel ban's effects on their members. So you can read more about this Friend of the Court brief, and you can read the brief on our website. Go to fffrf.org/legal.
And, of course, we point out that there is, in our Constitution, absolutely verboten to have a religious test for public office. It is also totally inappropriate under our secular constitution to have a religious test for entering our country. So, and we know that this has been, this is going to be used against the non-religious, as we've seen that around the world. One final serious topic. We don't have much time for this. FFRF has called on the Spokane Sheriff to cancel a Bible-based training center, training program that involves killology. At this time of Black Lives Matter, totally tone deaf, but it has a biblical premise. And Dan, maybe in 30 seconds you can
Well,
summarize
you know,
that.
There's a bunch of Bible verses in this program saying, instructing them that the Ten Commandments don't say, thou shalt not kill. The Bible says you can kill. It just says, thou shalt not murder. Of course, that's totally wrong. A lot of Bible verses are quoted showing how the police do have the right to use lethal force in our society.
And so you can read more about that on our website under the news link, ffrf.org/news. And the individual who writes most of those press releases or edits them is on the phone with us patiently waiting, Amit Pal, our Director of Communications. So welcome back to Free Thought Radio.
Always a pleasure to be on the show, Andy Laurie. Thank you.
And when we had reason to talk, we're all working remotely yesterday, and you brought my attention to a radical, serious, chilling development yesterday, I guess it was, or the day before in India. Do you want to talk about that?
Yes. Some people may have caught the headlines for the story and on CNN, etc., and thought this is yet another example of medieval thought in a country like India, but it isn't. It actually goes back to 1947 and the founding of India as the world's largest secular democracy. It has, of course, more than a billion people. And the founders of India were people like Mahatma Gandhi and Jawaharlal Nehru. Now, Gandhi was religious, but Nehru, whom the FFRF admires a lot, and actually we have an entry on him in our gallery of freethinkers, was a freethinker and ensured during his prime ministership of India from 1947 to 64 that India became a secular country that respected all religions equally. At the same time, in the 1920s, an organization was founded which is best known by its acronym, the RSS. An ex-member of the RSS killed Gandhi because they thought him to be too indulgent toward the country's minority Muslims. Why is this relevant? The political arm of that very organization, the RSS, is in power now, and Narendra Modi, the Prime Minister of India, the current leader of India, has been a member of the RSS since he was 8 years old.
Hmm.
A major, that's incredible, isn't it, Dan?
Yeah.
And a major grievance of the movement has been that a mosque was supposedly built on the very site where a major Hindu deity, Ram, was said to have been born. Modi, on August 5th, went and performed the foundation ceremony, very religious, extremely unbecoming for the leader of a secular country, where the mosque was demolished in 1992, and now they're having plans for a grand temple on the very site, which, incidentally, is very, very near my family village. It's just about 30, 40 miles away.
I was going to ask, this is the state where you were born, right?
Yes, well, where I'm from. I was born in Germany, actually, Annie Laurie, but
right.
I'm from there. Yes. My mother still lives in the village, as I said, quite nearby.
What's the name of that state again?
It's Uttar Pradesh,
UP, Pradesh.
Yeah, which means northern province. Believe it or not, Annie Laurie and Dan, it has a population of 200 million plus people.
Huh.
Yeah,
wow.
Which is more than most countries in the world. Very, very problematic and underdeveloped. And they're diverting people's minds away from the disaster that Modi has been. Almost 2 million COVID cases. 40,000 deaths, the economy in shambles. He has no answers on those fronts. So the best thing is just to, you know, basically distract people by doing this sort of stupidity. And also, it is emblematic of the way his party and his movement have hijacked religion in the service of Hindu nationalism.
So, I mean, we talk about the threat of Christian nationalism in the United States, but what we're seeing is even worse right now in India, with the threat of Hindu nationalism. And the New York Times had a big piece about it today where they say that the intent is to show that Modi and his party are building a Hindu nation and that India is a Hindu-majority country, not the Nehruvian secular India that we have known for the past 70 years.
Yes,
so
Annie
very Laurie,
it is such a break from the Nehruvian notion of India that people are talking about this as the founding of India's Second Republic. It's such a rupture, such a sad rupture from the way India has been governed, imperfectly so, but in a broad secular manner, till at least 2014 when Modi first came to power, and certainly till maybe yesterday.
Well, we're out of time. We're out of time, Amit. Thank you. And you pointed out, of course, that Modi and Trump are like best buddies. They're both religious nationalists for different religions, but they're using this. Don't you think they're using it for religion for political gain?
Absolutely, Dan. And they love each other. And Trump made his last international visit before COVID to India, not surprisingly, where Modi gave him a grand welcome.
Well, thank you, Amit.
Yes, thank you for keeping tabs on what's happening in this other part of the world that is so dismaying.
Thanks so much, Annie Laurie and Dan.
And so,
after the break, we will hear some comfort music by Cole Porter, who was an atheist, and then we'll talk with...
And then we'll talk with, I don't know which one of us should read this, FFRS Director of Governmental Affairs, Mark Dan, about a number of exciting developments in D.C. as he is lobbying to keep religion out of government. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
The time to be happy is now. The place to be happy is here. The way to be happy is to make others happy. The time to be happy is now. The time to be happy is now.
Hi, I'm Steve Pinker. In my book, Enlightenment Now, I show that the world has become a better place as reason has been overcoming superstition and tribalism. But the values of the Enlightenment are under attack. That's why I'm a proud member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of free thinkers working to keep state and church separate. Please join me in supporting the Freedom From Religion Foundation to ensure that our government is driven not by religion, but by reason.
The time to be happy is now. The place to be happy is here. The way to be happy.
This is Free Thought Radio. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and that children's song that was composed by my co-host Dan Barker, and you heard him singing with an adorable chorus of children just now, that's based on the words of the 19th century great agnostic orator Robert G. Ingersoll, whose birthday is this upcoming week on August 11th. But is a pandemic the time to be happy?
Well, we mentioned on an earlier show that during this pandemic, some of our neighbors have been meeting out in the street every evening for a sing-along. It's nice to get outside for some social interaction.
And we all wear masks and stay at least 6 feet apart, and we take turns picking the song. There's been a lot of Beatles, but since we're all feeling fenced in during the crisis, on one week, Dan had suggested the Cole Porter song, which is not a typical Cole Porter song, Don't Fence Me In, anticipating the day when we might get back to normal. And as regular listeners to this show know, the composer of the classic American standards, Cole Porter, was an atheist.
And since freethinkers are people who don't want to be fenced in by dogma or the religious thought police, Cole Porter's song might be a kind of anti-hymn, I guess. The version we sang along with that night was the 1940s performance by Bing Crosby and the Andrews Sisters.
Oh, give me land, lots of land under starry skies. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide country that I love. Don't fence me in.
But after we sang that, one of our neighbors mentioned that David Byrne did a more recent version of the song in 1990.
So let's listen to David Byrne singing Don't Fence Me In. A version of Don't Fence Me In by David Byrne. And Dan, I think you pointed out to our neighbors that this is the most unusual Cole Porter song. In fact, he hated it after he wrote it. He wrote it for a musical, right?
It never got performed.
But in the 40s, it got caught on. And it's the McCollum's family's favorite song, which Vashti McCollum, who took the first Supreme Court case against religious instruction in the public schools. But there's one line that sounds to me to be very Cole Porterish when he says, "I want to gaze at the moon until I lose my senses." That does have his touch.
Yeah.
Even though the rest of it is very untraditional for him.
Cole Porter told Irving Berlin he didn't really like that song, but Irving Berlin said, "Never hate a song that sold 500,000 copies." So, we're going to take a break. This is a guitar version of Don't Fence Me In, we're hearing. After the break, we're going to talk with FFRF's Director of Governmental Affairs, Mark Dan, about a number of exciting developments in Washington, D.C., as he, for FFRF, is lobbying to keep religion out of government.
And we're going to talk about a lot of very specific things and some victories as well and things to look forward to.
Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
Hi, I'm Julia Sweeney, and I'm an atheist and former Catholic. I even wrote a play about it called Letting Go of God. Right now, Catholic bishops are using their considerable influence to deny women contraceptive rights. Please join the Freedom from Religion Foundation and help keep church and state separate. You can call 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit ffrf.org to stand up for true religious freedom.
As Mark Twain said, Faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
Hello, we're back. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. Dan and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which went national in 1978, but it was only until last May 2019, that we were able and had the ability to hire our first full-time director of governmental affairs based in Washington, D.C. And our governmental affair director, Mark Dan, worked as the director of governmental affairs for the Secular Coalition for America previously, also a federal affairs director at a group I really like, Compassion and Choices, which is a right to end your life advocacy group. He has been a democracy development consultant with the National Democratic Institute in Moldova and Iraq, and was a Peace Corps volunteer in Crimea before it was invaded in Russia. So very interesting background. And so we want to welcome, we should also say he lives in Washington, D.C. with his husband, just a few blocks away from where he works at a WeWorks. And he has greatly helped to raise the national profile of the Freedom From Religion Foundation and shape our governmental relations policy to uphold the separation of state and church and the rights of non-theistic Americans. So welcome back to Free Thought Radio, Mark Dan.
Thank you so much, Annie Laurie and Dan. It's great to be here, and thank you, Buzz, in the control room. I appreciate everything.
So, Mark, we actually haven't seen you since the pandemic. I think it's been 6 months, hasn't it? Wasn't it in February when
yeah.
we last saw you in D.C.? You still look the same?
Relatively the same. I got my second haircut since I had a slight reopening here in D.C., so I'm looking a little less shaggy than I once was. So it was pretty interesting back there for a while. So short of that, relatively the same.
So, you know, it's all been different for all of us, but what's it been like being a D.C. lobbyist during the pandemic right now?
I think the fundamentals of the job really don't change that much, simply engaging members of Congress, their staff, and allied organizations. Obviously, a lot more has shifted to Google Meets and phones and being able to kind of walk around the Capitol, pick up those small pieces of informal conversation, attend committee hearings, which is one of my favorite activities. So you get to see who's coming into the room, who's engaging, who isn't. So those opportunities aren't quite there, but we're still able to do an awful lot. We've got great working relationships with members of the Congressional Freethought Caucus. I think those have been strengthened during the pandemic, and also with a lot of our secular allies as well. So I do miss a lot of the in-person interactions that we have. However, to be honest with you, the dress code is a little less strict when I don't have to go to the Hill for meetings.
This is true. And I hear you have your little dog with you there at work, keeping you company.
That is true. Yep, Manny is here. He is having fun with his little blanket area on the floor with his favorite toy.
So I was wondering, since we last spoke, there is a spike now again in D.C. with the coronavirus, isn't there?
Last I took, we're leveled out. We've been holding at about 75 cases per day, but don't quote me directly on that. So it's leveled. We're up a little bit from our low, but it's not terrible here. We do have what's known as a phase two opening. So that's allowed for some indoor seating in restaurants. Offices are able to open to a certain degree, but the Hill remains closed unless, of course, you're in Louis Gohmert's office, which I'm glad is going back with keeping his staff members' safety in mind, which I'm kind of shocked about that he didn't.
Yeah. Now, since you haven't been on Free Thought Radio for a long time, but we have some news in the last month. We did issue a press release about this. The Freedom From Religion Foundation has officially become a member of the Leadership Conference for Civil and Human Rights. And so why is that so important, Mark?
This is really important because the Leadership Conference networks FFRF with a lot of other like-minded organizations fighting on a host of issues that touch on state-church separation, from making our courts fairer to removing religious exemptions in healthcare. Plus, we're able to share and pool resources from polling, communications, grassroots, and lobbying as well. So they're kind of a large coordinating body for a lot of organizations that hold the same values that we hold dear as well. And just a historical note, the Leadership Conference came out of the Civil Rights Movement. It was founded by a free thinker, A. Philip Randolph, who was the head of the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters, and Roy Wilkins from the NAACP, and Aaron Aronson, the leader of the National Jewish Community Relations Advisory Council. So there's always been a strong interfaith part of the Leadership Conference as well. Plus, a lot of our other secular allies are also members as well. So we're looking forward to engaging them more on the task force and bring more of a secular perspective to the Leadership Conference as we continue to move forward.
And so how is this going to help make FFRF more effective?
Well, I think the best anecdote I can give you on that is when the Kavanaugh nomination came up. And so the day or so after the Kavanaugh nomination was announced, there were over 100 organizations that came to the Leadership Conference, and we had an all-hands-on-deck meeting to talk about, okay, how can we do research on Kavanaugh? How can we communicate this to our members? How do we engage people on the Hill? And we start kind of almost very professionally, clock-like, start checking down all the things that we needed to do and started to build a lot of momentum around that. One of the first pieces of responsibility that a lot of the secular groups had was to take a lot of his data and information and papers that were coming out of the federal government. We unfortunately didn't get a complete picture, and started vetting them. And Andrew, Ryan, and so many other folks on the FFRF team spent a fair amount of time poring over his papers. Then we started having Hill meetings to talk about our qualms about Kavanaugh with secular organizations, other members of the Leadership Conference. And I got the hard assignment, so trying to get appointments with Ted Cruz's office was particularly interesting. And one of the things that I'm really happy we were able to bring and contribute to the Leadership Conference activities, and one of the first ventures of the Congressional Freethought Caucus, when the evidence came to light about his past, his record, his Christian nationalist stance, was to issue a letter in opposition from the members of the Congressional Freethought Caucus that we help, and with so many other folks, helped advocate for as well.
So we were working informally with this group, but now we're really part of it.
Now we are on the line. That is correct.
So we can't say we didn't do everything possible to oppose that horrible nomination.
If there is something we could have done, I would have more that we could have done, I'd love to know about it for next time.
So speaking of judges, the Trump administration has now installed, and this is very dismaying, 200 federal judges. And that's roughly a quarter of the federal judges are now Trump appointees. And many of these judges are unabashedly Christian nationalists, they're theocrats, they've, you know, been vetted by the Federalist Society. There's been a litmus test that they should be anti-abortion and theocratic and so on. And I think we want to talk with you about one particular incident involving a Christian nationalist judicial nominee by the name of Justin Walker, who came before the Senate Judiciary Committee for his confirmation. And there's quite an interesting anecdote about Senator Hirono, who's on the Freethought Caucus. And you want to talk about that?
Sure. And so Hirono, unfortunately, isn't a member of the Congressional Freethought Caucus.
That's right. We don't have a senator.
Not yet.
Sorry. Thank you.
And she is certainly on our collective wish list as well. But what she said during this hearing, and keep in mind this hearing, you had Justin Walker, who's, I think, about 37 years old. He's a protege of Mitch McConnell. And Judge Walker was first was nominated to the Western District of Kentucky. This past hearing, he was up for a promotion to the D.C. Circuit Court, which is the second most powerful court in the country. Its jurisdiction is Congress, government agencies, so a lot of American administrative and constitutional claims go there. And he's very close with McConnell. So McConnell, for this hearing, brought back the Senate instead of working on COVID legislation in June. And there was a lot of pressure on senators that voting against Walker is a vote against the majority leader. And during this hearing, a lot of folks were trying to get to the essence of, well, what does he stand for? And so Hirono did some very wise things. And she brought a lot of his she started out and brought a lot of his record back. And one quote that I have is Walker's own writing, which he talked about the impact of arch conservatives joining the federal bench. And so Hirono said, "I predict an end to affirmative action, an end to successful litigation about religious displays and prayers, and an end to bans on semi-auto rifles, and an end to almost all judicial decisions allowing abortion." So she started to construct what his own writings were about. And then she went, and then this was really significant because there's been a kind of a hesitancy for a lot of senators to talk about sometimes their a nominee's personal beliefs and how that can characterize how they're going to make decisions on the bench. And so she showed that you can do this, you can have this line of questioning by relying on their past writing, which is up for public debate. And she brought the issue of separation church and state front and center of the nomination process, and she did a wonderful job.
So we are talking with Mark Dan, who is FFRS Director of Governmental Affairs based in Washington, D.C., working full-time for FFRF, for our members, for those of you who believe in separation of church and state. And we've got a lot more to talk about when we come back, including Pompeo, the Free Thought Caucus, and...
How fast can you talk, Mark?
And many other developments. So stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots. Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at FFRF.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers.
It ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. We're continuing our conversation with the Freedom From Religion Foundation's Director of Governmental Affairs, Mark Dan.
Based in Washington, D.C., and Mark sends out a monthly report to members of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. So if you want to get all the details, be sure to join us at FFRF.org. And before we talk about, we don't have a lot of time, before we talk about Pompeo and the Congressional Freethought Caucus, briefly, Mark, what's next on FFRF's legislative agenda? What are we looking at?
We are looking for a very active final few months of this legislative session. So a couple bills I just want to highlight for folks is one is the CORE Act. And what that does is provides accountability for a lot of COVID relief funds. And as we know, a persistent problem is that religious organizations can play by different rules than secular organizations. So if an organization received COVID relief funds and sort of $150,000 and up, this law will mandate reporting. So we'll have more details on the hundreds of thousands of dollars that the Archdiocese got. We'll know more about Trump's friends, evangelical friends, who are able to get, were able to access COVID funds. Obviously, we objected to that line of funding, but I think this is a good step that can help move greater accountability across the spectrum. And we're working very closely with Friends in Public Citizen, plus other secular organizations have joined the bills, and we're also in partnership with the sponsorship offices, Representative Jayapal's office, who is the House co-sponsor, and then also Senator Warren, who is the Senate sponsor. Another thing important to highlight, the Do No Harm Act, which would prevent, which would bar religious exemptions in public services and public accommodations. We're up to 175 co-sponsors, so we want to keep building that number to get as close to a House majority as possible. So if there is an opportunity to pass the bill, we hope for next Congress, you won't have to start counting noses from zero. You can just put the bill on the floor a little faster. And one thing that I think is really interesting is the Women's Health Protection Act. And I want to give a big shout out to Barbara Alvarez, who is a Annie Laurie Gaylor senior intern who helped
Ann
work
Gaylor,
on...
Yeah, the Ann Gaylor Reproductive Rights intern. And I agree, big shout out.
Yeah.
And she's doing a wonderful job on that one and is able to bring a secular perspective to the reproductive justice movement. She just, if you have a chance, please go on to FFRF's Twitter page and check out a lot of the tweets. She did a wonderful job of being able to bring reproductive and secular rights together. And so you'll be expecting, so you'll probably see more coming out of that area to support the Women's Health Care Protection Act.
What is that?
So the Women's Health Care Protection Act seeks to remove a lot of the unnecessary barriers that get placed in women being able to access reproductive services. So waiting times and hospital requirements and surgical requirements and things like that, just sort of the barrier upon barrier that is unfairly placed for women to access care.
Yeah, I'm real, that's a very important bill. Well, so thanks for that really fast recap.
Can I ask a quick question? Did you say that there's wording in the CORE Act to require churches to report?
So what it does is that the thing I like about it is that it treats everyone equally. And it says that if you receive money, you have to report on this. It doesn't create a separate standard for secular organizations, and it doesn't create a different one for religious organizations. It treats everybody the same, which I think is all we're asking for, is fairness in reporting and giving the public a right to know what's happening and how their money is being used and spent.
Hear, hear. So we're going to run out of time, so I wonder if we could talk a little bit more about the Congressional Freethought Caucus, which you are very instrumental in working with and representing FFRF on and in touch with all the time. So we have had Representative Jared Huffman on 2 weeks ago, thanks to your work, Mark, who is the co-founder with Jamie Raskin of the House. And what, there are about 12 members now?
That's correct, yes.
And Representative Jayapal is also a member whom we mentioned about the sponsorship of the CORE Act. And so what's the caucus been doing and why is it so important?
Well, I think what you saw about 2 weeks ago with Representative Huffman coming on Free Thought Radio to talk about Secretary Pompeo's Commission on Unalienable Rights report. And sometimes the idea of, oh, this is just a report from the State Department, it's not that big of a deal. No, this actually was a very big deal. Essentially what this report does is it gives the State Department a green light to conduct a Christian nationalist foreign policy. And the Congressional Freethought Caucus was very attuned to this report, very attuned to this direction, and understands that this could have a lot of ramification for policies in terms of HIV, AIDS access, reproductive justice, funding of churches, and also what rights will the State Department be paying attention to and what won't they? And so if you think reproductive justice is a fundamental right, if you think LGBTQ rights are a fundamental right, then this report should be very concerning. And the big thing about it is that this is another example of the Congressional Freethought Caucus really becoming a very active caucus. There's the more well-known caucuses, such as the Congressional Black Caucus, the Equality Caucus, and then there's a lot that are more or less exist on paper. And this is an example of the Congressional Freethought Caucus really becoming very active in policymaking, becoming very active in current events on the Hill, becoming very active on the separation of state and church. So this is in addition to, as we mentioned earlier, opposing Judge Walker, Judge Kavanaugh, raising questions about Jeff Sessions' Religious Liberty Task Force, looking at appropriations to knock out a lot of religious exemptions, and also endorsing pieces of legislation such as the Scientific Integrity Act and the No Ban Act. So it's showing that the caucus is becoming very active. Members are becoming to speak from a greater position of authority, and the separation of church and state is a paramount issue that is really important to making sure that a lot of the rights we hold dear are preserved.
That's right. And well, in the past few months, the caucus has, for example, passed a resolution out of committee condemning the international blasphemy laws. And we did see somebody just recently shot in a courtroom in Pakistan, for example, you know, because they have terrible blasphemy laws there. What else have they been doing?
So one of the things that I think that was really, really significant, in addition to a lot of the things that I mentioned earlier, was if you look back at a lot of what Huffman said, is that on the show about the Pompeo report, is that he said that the Pompeo report kind of takes two super rights that go above the constitutional framework and kind of elevate them above all other rights, so property and religious liberty. And what Huffman said is saying, no, a lot of segregation, Jim Crow laws, was essentially marrying property rights and the idea that it's being ordained and blessed by God. Most Americans would just find that notion completely nuts. But Huffman went further and talked about on the show that there's people who in Congress who believe in the rapture and the end of days and a lot of other very strong Christian nationalist beliefs. So one thing I'm really proud of is that you do see people like Huffman and Raskin and Jayapal and so many others and McNerney and Kildee who are really raising awareness on this, becoming leaders in the House on religious liberty issues and showing people of how important these issues are. And simply by having the religious exemptions, that they're becoming really backdoor ways that you can discriminate against people and have a free hand in discrimination. That's one of the things we're working very closely with our allies in Congress. So many members are calling their representatives and engaging them and saying that how important this issue is and how not having the backdoor to religious and not having the backdoor for religious exemptions and closing those loopholes and prevents a lot of other discriminations for so many areas of our life.
Well, thank you so much. We are out of time. Mark Dan, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you for everything you've enlightened us about.
We look forward to your next report.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it. Always a pleasure being here, and thanks for having me on.
Thank you. And thank you, Buzz, for engineering another good show. Thank you, listeners in Philadelphia, in Madison, Wisconsin, in Janesville, Wisconsin, to KEOS in Central Texas, to KOPN in Missouri, to WOOL in Vermont, New Hampshire, to WRFI in Ithaca and Watkins Glen. If you want to know more about Freethought Radio, go to our website, ffrf.org/radio.
And you can ask for more information at the Freedom From Religion Foundation website, ffrf.org. You can join us there at that donate link. Or you can ask for more information, including a sample of our excellent newspaper, Free Thought Today, which carries even more in-depth news. So we hope that you will tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.